Hello there, and welcome back to the Music Career Show. So today on the podcast, I have got a first for everybody. So recently, the guy that I have on, I had his wife on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. So avid listeners might remember Michelle Joyce, also known as Guitar Goddess, and she was lovely. Well, this is her husband. He is a phenomenal guitar teacher, specializing in teaching beginners online through his YouTube channel. And for anybody that wants to get into teaching guitar online, this lad is definitely what you need to be, who you need to be watching, what you need to be aiming for, because his aesthetic, his everything is just mwah. For anybody listening on the podcast and not watching, I've done that like French chef kiss thing. Mwah. sorry. That was, anyway. Without further ado, this is Cody Joyce, aka Groovy Guitar Dude. Cody, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. It's nice to meet you, man.
Yeah, it's lovely to meet you too, and I'm delighted that you agreed to come on. So for the listener or the viewer who is maybe just meeting you for the first time, why don't you introduce yourself to them and tell them who you are and what you do?
Yeah, for sure. My name is Cody, and I teach guitar primarily on YouTube for the past about 7 or 8 years, and I've posted about 1,000 kind of 5 to 15 minute guitar lessons for beginners out there on YouTube. And I recently started dabbling in TikTok and short form content and all that kind of stuff as well. My general goal with teaching guitar on YouTube was to be able to give back to a community that gave a lot to me when I first started learning how to play. I'm completely self-taught. And so when I first started teaching, I wanted to give back to that community, and I've very fortunately been able to turn it into a career. So
excellent stuff, and I can't wait to dive into all of that stuff. First of all, though, it would be remiss of me to just very quickly ask, who started YouTube first, you or Michelle? And how the Michelle. Hell did that happen? So Michelle started first, and were you two together when she started, or did you come together through YouTube?
No, this is a great question, a great story, but okay. She's actually been doing YouTube quite a bit longer than I have. So she's been doing... She started YouTube, I think, in like 2009 or 2010, mm-hmm. like very early days YouTube. Mm. And then I actually started in kind of the very end of 2014, beginning of 2015. Okay. So quite a bit later, like probably 5 to 7 years after she started. Right. And we actually met about 4 years ago. And so we already both have been doing YouTube for a long time whenever we met, and that's how we kind of connected initially, is we kind of made friends online, and we would drop each other comments every once in a while, and I had a big crush on her and stuff. And so anyways, it kind of went that way where we had kind of like a really cool online friendship. And then about 4 years ago, her family lives up in the Chicago area, and I have an uncle that lives in Chicago, and I was going to stay for kind of a week with that uncle to go visit. I was like, hey, I'm going to be up in Chicago. Like, do you want to get together and make some videos together or something? Yeah. So we got together and we just hit it off, of course, right away. And so, so we started dating shortly after that. That would have been, we started dating in November of 2019.
Oh, wow.
And then, we got married, coming up on, we actually got married on the same date we started dating, which is kind of cool. And, so we'll have been married for 2 years in November.
Wow. Fair play to you. That's great stuff. Well, there you go. So anyone that was tuning into this episode to find out, leading on from Michelle's episode, there you go. I hope that has, I hope that satisfied you. It certainly satisfied me. That's amazing though, that you started, texting online, and then here you go. You should get onto Netflix or something. That'd be an amazing documentary.
Yeah, we've been told that before. We got a real cool love story.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There's so much negative stuff that Netflix brings out, like amongst this like sort of like genre, like thinking like of like the Tinder swindler and all that kind of crack.
Oh yeah,
you could be like, I don't know, something. I'll leave that with me. We're going to make this happen. I'm going to get on to Mr. Netflix, and we're all going to do this. We're all in this together. It's going to be class. But anyway, before we go there, why don't we reverse back, speak a little bit about how you got into music to begin with? Where did it all start for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of grew up around music a bit. My family, my parents have always been very kind of musical, not in the sense that they played instruments a whole lot, but there was just always music around the house growing up. My mom loves music. My dad was a professional sound man growing up. And so, yeah, for sure. So like he, you know, I was always kind of around him. Sometimes I'd go and, you know, I'd run cable for him, setting up, you know, his sound rig and stuff like that for live gigs. And when I was a kid. And anyway, so I was always kind of around it, always kind of liked music. And then to jump forward, when I actually kind of started getting into playing music, I was about probably 13 or 14 the first time I picked up a guitar at a friend's house. And, I, you know, I just started messing with it for the first time ever. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I love this. Like, this is great. Is the best thing ever. And so, you know, for a while it was just like, okay, like I got to go, like every time I go to this friend's house, I'd spend the whole time just playing his guitar. And so finally I ended up borrowing a guitar from my aunt and, had that for a while. And then I got my first one shortly after that. And so, yeah, I was kind of always interested in music and then kind of got started in actually playing music kind of like my early teen years.
Great stuff. Great stuff. And I know now, usually I ask at this stage, when you started lessons, did you teach yourself or were, did you go for lessons? However, I know that you're sort of, you and me have a very, very similar start in that we're kind of half and half in that we taught ourselves through like YouTube lessons. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I really never took any formal lessons. So I had some friends that played guitar that would kind of help me out too. And then I really learned from mostly YouTube lessons, Ultimate Guitar, that sort of thing. So, so dudes like Marty Shorts and like Justin Guitar, like, you know, a lot of those guys who are kind of like my peers now, they're kind of, you know, people who do the same thing and kind of friends with those kind of dudes now. I actually learned most of, you know, my beginner stuff from them, my foundational stuff from them just via YouTube. So, and I'm such a strong advocate of that. Like, that's why I do what I do is because back then, like when I first started learning how to play guitar, my family couldn't really afford to put me in formal guitar lessons at the time very much. And so like we probably could have made it happen. But like I was like also it was half like we couldn't really afford it and half like I want to see if I can just like do this in my own way on my own time. And, so anyways, yeah, again, that's kind of some of the origins of YouTube, which I'm sure we'll talk a bit about later and why I started, because I wanted a way to learn without having to, you know, burden my family with a financial thing that they might not be able to afford very well. And so, yeah.
Of course. And now here's a question for you. I actually haven't had this written down, but it just sort of, speaking about this, sort of unlocked a memory for me, was that I'm same as you, self-taught through YouTube. But the one thing that I always found about YouTube was that, and this goes for anything that you're learning. You could be learning how to sew or pick a lock or God knows what you're doing. Unless you know what to actually search for, that can be a bit of a roadblock. And I remember specifically what really turned the key, for lack of a better term, for me, or the key to me being able to actually learn myself on YouTube was a mate of mine showed me how to read tabs. And all of a sudden I was like, ah, that's exactly it. Right. So now I'm not necessarily looking for, because I remember trying to learn Sweet Child of Mine. And I remember specifically Googling Sweet Child of Mine chords, no numbers, because I had no idea what the numbers were. I had not a clue what the numbers were. And when my mate told me, oh, it's tab, this is what it is, I was like, oh, duh, right, easy peasy. So that was like the catalyst for me being able to really go full on and learn guitar. Was there a similar sort of moment for you, or how did you fare out with that?
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I would say I kind of had similar experiences, just like you said, where especially in the very early days of learning, where I was primarily learning on YouTube, but I would always, you know, if I had questions, I would ask my friends. If I got stuck on something that I felt like there was a gap in what I was able to learn on YouTube, or maybe I couldn't, like you said, maybe I couldn't figure out exactly what I needed to search to find what I was trying to learn. You know, or even at that time, like now there's there's video on everything on YouTube, but even just that long ago, you know, again, we're talking, when I was first starting to learn, it would have been very early days of YouTube. I'm trying to think of the actual year, but I mean, it would have been when I was 13 or 14. So, I mean, 15, you know, 17 years ago, something like that. I'm not doing the math well in my head, but anyways,
same around the same time as me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So YouTube was a bit more sparse than it is now. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, yeah, like you said, like I definitely had friends that would help fill in the gaps. You know, I very distinctly remember when I was first, everybody struggles with learning the F chord on guitar, right?
Like I still struggle with it.
Yeah, you hit that first barrier of like, okay, things are already tricky. And then you hit that F chord and you're like, what the F is this, man?
Yeah.
And so like, I remember asking, I had two really close friends specifically that played, Matt and Parker. And I asked both of them, I was like, dude, what do I got to do to get this thing down? And they're like, just keep practicing. They showed me a few things and, you know, eventually I got it, of course. But yeah, I would say, like you said, you know, having some friends that help fill in the gaps there made a big difference for me, but mostly YouTube. I would say like, you know, 85, 90% YouTube and like Ultimate Guitar and some of that kind of stuff. And then 10% or so of like, you know, phone a friend kind of thing.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, no, I always love hearing people that had a very similar experience to me, because I always sound like such an ancient old lad, like when I speak like this, but like people take for granted just how amazing and how amazing things like YouTube are nowadays. Because back when we were learning, my process for learning was like, I'd hear a new song. So I'd hear Crazy Nights by Kiss on like Kerrang. Did you have Kerrang? Or
no,
MTV, so. VH1, whatever the music channel was, right?
Yeah.
So you'd hear Crazy Nights by Kiss on the music channel. I'm like, oh, class, that's really, really cool. I'm going to go and learn that. And I'll go and look it up on YouTube. And it would take like 10, 15 minutes for the video, the 3-minute video of Crazy Nights by Kiss to actually load up so that you could hear it. So while that was doing, you'd go away and do something else. So I'd then go to Ultimate Guitar, try and find a tab that I could decipher well enough and print it off. And then while it was printing off, I'd learn the song. But then by the time the song had loaded up and then it printed off, I'd nearly gone off the idea because it had taken so long to load up. So people nowadays, or even kids learning nowadays, it is so possible. It was possible back then to learn off YouTube. Like, we're living testament to that, but it is so possible and so much more accessible nowadays to learn off YouTube. And it blows my mind. I often feel that this must be how people in like their 80s and 90s feel about like when mobile phones came along.
And
things along those lines. And Facebook and all. So yeah, I'm glad we're living through that. But yeah, anyway, I'm kind of going off on a bit of a tangent there now, being all reminiscent, but anyway.
Yeah, no, it's a good one though. I mean, and I totally agree with everything you said. I mean, I'm in the same boat as far as like looking back and being like, man, like even just in the time that since you and I started playing, it's come such a long way. You know, now there's basically nothing you can't look up how to do on YouTube. And especially again, in our world, like you can look up the most obscure song and somebody probably has some kind of lesson or video of them playing it, or you can find some crappy, you know, phone video of the artist playing it so that you can watch their hands and try to watch what they're doing. Yeah. I mean, it's so, oh man, there's just so many tools nowadays to learn if people want to learn, and it's free, you know?
Yeah. You've unlocked another memory there for me. Was that one thing I used to do while I was learning was I used to watch guitarists' hands, and I used to see exactly how they done things. So like I could recognize pretty much any guitarist. That's a bold statement, but you know what I mean. I can recognize so many guitarists just by their hands and how to hold a plectrum and how to do like a power chord and stuff like that. I used to think that if you'd done a power chord with your first finger and your third finger, it was like the beginner way of doing it. And because I saw Dave Mustaine from Megadeth doing it that way. And this was
this was
when I was like 13, 14. I was like, I didn't realize that. I was like, oh, Megadeth are the bad guys and Metallica are the good guys. It's like, oh, if Dave Mustaine does it that way, and then James Hetfield does it with his rock fingers, I was like, oh, that is the way to do it. Do you know what I mean?
That's awesome.
There's just a little nugget of how my brain works. But yeah, I used to always watch everyone's hands, and I found that was such a helpful way to learn as well. But getting completely off topic here now. But let's get back on track and speak more about you rather than listening to all the shite that I got up to when I was a kid. So you started learning guitar. You said your friends were helping you sort of a little bit along the way. You were getting places. was music then always on the cards, or like, were you going to grow up and get a real job?
Oh, no, that's a great question. So to kind of bridge that a little bit. So with guitar, so when I first started playing, my dad was actually sick with cancer at the time. And he ended up passing about like a year and a half after I started playing. And that's so, hard. Yeah, for sure. It was obviously really tough. And he actually had always had this dream of playing guitar. So he was like a professional sound man. He was immersed in music all the time, but mm-hmm. He was kind of too busy with work. Like he would work these super long hours and mm-hmm. didn't really have time to pick up the guitar. And so I remember taking, you know, my guitar, or even the guitar that I was borrowing from my aunt whenever I first started playing, to the hospital. And I would sit and I would show him, like, you know, look, here's this song that I learned. And it was, you know, I could barely play at the time, but it was like, I just remember it was like a kind of a core memory for me. And, yeah. It was really like, to me, it meant something that he wanted to play, and he never really had the time or put the time into it. And I could tell he was really excited that I was starting to play. And so anyways, that was a lot of what really stuck me with music and mm-hmm. guitar specifically, yeah. was beyond just being interested in it. Because at that time, like, yeah, I was like immersed in it, 'cause I was first learning how to play. I was excited. But, what really at that time, at least, made me stick with it and be like, I really want to do something with this, was that, and kind of carrying on that, I guess, legacy might would be a word for it, something along those lines. And so anyways, at that time, to answer your question more specifically with that little bit of a bridge, mm-hmm. At that time, I didn't know I was going to be able to do anything with it career-wise. I would say I really didn't know I was going to be able to do something career-wise with it until probably around like 2015 or so, when I started the YouTube channel. I kind of started having inklings of at that time, like, I wasn't making any money or anything like that from YouTube when I first started posting, but I was like, this could be something. And so I always had, like, whenever I was going to college and towards the end of high school, I had this mind that I wanted to do like business. Like, I wanted to be an entrepreneur. Start a business, do my own thing, all of that. And so whenever I kind of started that YouTube channel, that was kind of a way, like, I started initially just as a way to kind of give back to that same community. But once I started getting some traction with it, I was like, I could turn this into something. Like, this could be, you know, bigger than just me sitting down sharing whatever song I'm learning right now or whatever. I would say like, I always had aspirations of doing my own thing. And I think I always wished it could be music related. Yeah. But I didn't really realize that it actually could be music related without becoming a rock star until, you know, like I said, maybe 2015, 2016, shortly after starting the YouTube channel.
Yeah, you literally spoke out my day-to-day until I was about 27. That, like, literally, I wanted to be a rock star when I grew up, and that was it. I didn't want to be anything else, because that was... I always bring up this point on the podcast, is that, like, when you're a kid and you're into cars, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, you want to drive cars, you want to be a mechanic. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you're into animals, you might want to be a vet. It's a natural progression. For musicians, if you're into music as a kid, your sort of natural progression is rock star or music teacher. There wasn't really, when we were growing up, like in the 90s, there just wasn't really anything else. Whereas nowadays, I always laugh, because I'm always like, part of my job is me sitting in my fancy little shed talking to people on the computer about mm-hmm. music, and that is genuinely part of my job, and that is a legitimate way of earning money nowadays. Whereas 10 years ago, if I told that to anyone, they'd be like, no, stop it, shut up, don't be such an idiot. Do you know what I mean? So what were you doing up until then, basically? What did you do up until 2015 when you realized that you could have something here? This is an avenue that is, up until now, sort of unexplored by others mainly.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I, and just to backtrack for a second, like, I totally agree with you. I mean, I still have to explain to people what Michelle and I do, you know, and like how we actually can make a living from it and all of that kind of stuff. So I mean, nowadays, of course, like our generation and you know, people that kind of, you know, like I've got a brother and sister who are in their early 20s, like their generation, they get it, you know.
Yeah.
But almost anybody beyond our generation, they just have a hard time wrapping their head around how something like that could actually work and be a job, be a real living.
Yeah.
So up until that point, before I started kind of being able to build something out of YouTube, it was kind of just like, I had just kind of regular jobs, you know, I had some retail jobs and stuff like that. I worked at Hollister for a long time. I worked at the store called World Market. I don't know if y'all have World Market over there. It's kind of like it's really cool. It's kind of like this international store that has like, they kind of have a little bit of everything, but it's like a retail store. They've got like international foods. They've got like furniture that's from different places around the world. And
I think I've been in it when I've been over in the States. I think I've been in one.
Oh yeah. They're really cool.
It sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very like eclectic and stuff. So I worked there for a little while, and then I worked at Hollister for a little while. And then at some point I actually had some family friends wanted to like their young son wanted to learn some guitar, and they were like, hey, will you help him out? You know, we'll pay you. And so that was kind of my first like kind of step into teaching like formal sit down guitar lessons.
Yeah.
Outside of kind of an online setup. So I did that for a while. I took on some more students. Like I would kind of have a rotation of about probably like 5 to 15 students for like a week for each week for about like probably about 2 years before I started the YouTube channel. All
right.
Yeah. And so that kind of led me into that. That kind of led me into like that wasn't my full-time gig necessarily. I was still kind of doing other jobs and stuff. I had some like full-time jobs and stuff like that, but I never really like had a career before music. Mm-hmm. I kind of just was like doing like whatever to make ends meet. And so, that kind of was my step into guitar lessons. I was like, like I'm doing this. I just taught this song. Like my first song, I think was Blank Space by Taylor Swift. And I just taught this third or fourth grade little girl how to play Blank Space by Taylor Swift right around the time it came out. I was like, like this just came out. Maybe I can make a video on this and like put it up and all that. Cause maybe not, it just came out. Maybe not a lot of people have learned this or, you know, anything like that. So let me throw it up there and see what happens.
And what happened?
I got like hardly any views, but I was like, this is a cool process. This is interesting. I enjoy this. And, it gradually built, of course, but you know, your first video, like almost nobody watches it. And so, I kind of went through that. Like when I, right around that time, like I said, like new Taylor Swift album had just come out. Michelle and I are both huge Taylor Swift fans and have been for a long, long time. And so, I was like, I'm just going to kind of run through the album. So I taught like most of her album, most of 1989, and that had, again, just come out at the time. And then I had one video. I taught some other popular songs around that time too, and it was very informal also. Like my teaching at that time was lots of ums, lots of pauses, lots of I was filming on my crappy iPad, that like no microphone or anything. No stand. It was literally just like leaned up against something.
Props or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Very, very like, and those videos are still live. People can go look at those and stuff and see. I like to go watch those sometimes to like see how far I've come and like be like, you know, it just is like some context. And anyways, like I started teaching a lot of Taylor Swift songs and then some other popular songs at the time. And I'm trying to remember, but I think the first song I had that actually kind of, the first lesson I had that actually kind of like got a little bit of traction was, Earned It by The Weeknd. Okay. And which is kind of interesting because it's not even really a guitar song. And, I taught that one and it got what at the time was a lot of traction, which is like, I think a couple thousand views or something like that. Which at the time was a lot for me.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my first taste. I still wasn't making any money or anything, but that was kind of my first taste of like, if I do the right song at the right time and I do a good lesson of it and teach it in a cool way that maybe nobody else has taught it, then, you know, maybe I can get somewhere with this. And Cool. Yeah, so that was kind of my first little taste of, you know, and it just built from there.
Brilliant. It's good. I do always love hearing those stories that, like, people that have huge followings like you and Michelle, that he did start on just whatever you had available, and you went into it without any real, because you guys were some of the first to do it, like, basically, that there was no real intentions of making this a career. This was just like, I'll stick that up there. That's good.
Yep.
Yay. Do you know what I mean? I love that. And it gives people like me hope. Because nowadays, people that are starting, right? As soon as you start thinking about starting a YouTube channel, you're going to get served ads on social media. Oh, 10 steps to getting 1 million followers on YouTube by 5 o'clock. Do you know what I mean? All this kind of other stuff. And while an awful lot of it is false promises, there is some good stuff in there that you can sort of reverse engineer in, like, how to make a good thumbnail, how to make, how to use good tags and stuff like that. And it's okay. It makes your videos, for me anyway, I feel it makes my videos look somewhat professional looking. But then you go and look at someone like you who's been doing it for so long, and sometimes your thumbnails look just like, just really simple, and you're getting tens of thousands of views. And it just goes to show that it's one of these things that you do have to build it up.
I kind of know where you're getting at. Like, you know, nowadays it's so established that YouTube, if people are pursuing it, there's a really good chance they're pursuing it for the sake of trying to turn it into a job or trying to turn it into income. And so people take it very seriously, and they'll, you know, look at those sorts of videos that you're talking about. They'll watch those sort of videos and say, oh, I got to spend all this money on, like, a nice camera, a nice microphone right out of the gate and stuff like that. A nice laptop that I can edit on. But, you know, back then, and I hopefully still now people do this sort of thing. I think I've seen some people that do this sort of thing, but, like, back then it was like, you just started with what you had. And I think there's something to that. You know, I think anytime I get, Michelle and I get questions all the time of people interested in doing stuff kind of like what we do, or building a, trying to build a YouTube channel essentially. And, you know, they always ask, and they're always like, oh, what kind of gear do I need to get? What kind of gear do I get? And I'm like, dude, just start with your phone. You know, just start there and see where it goes, and maybe get a cheap microphone, you know, off Amazon or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, when I first started, I only put into my gear what I was making from YouTube. So I didn't spend any money on gear until I had made that money from YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah. And so,
what was the first thing then that you invested in? So the point that I have here that I wanted to ask you was, I was going to ask you to try and, like, lay out, like, a kind of a three stage kind of progression of, like, starting from day one, you have a phone, that's all you need, grand. What is sort of stage two then? Stage two can be like, right, let's start investing in this. Let's start investing in the video quality and the audio quality and the overall improvement of what it is that you're putting out. So what is the next stage? What is the first thing that you invested in?
A microphone. Yeah, like, I always tell people, especially nowadays, again, if you're shooting on your phone, like, most people's phones are wonderful video quality nowadays. And so if you're shooting on your phone, even just getting a simple microphone can make a huge difference, because a lot of people, especially when they're starting out and don't know anything about, like, audio video, their immediate thought is like, oh, I got to spend all this money on a camera because the picture quality is super important. Well, especially if you're shooting on your phone, most phones shoot wonderful video quality, but have really mediocre audio. And you can almost fake good video by having really good audio. And so, so like I said, like you were referencing to, like, step two, you know, first thing you put a little bit of money into is improving your audio. Even if that's buying a $50 microphone off of Amazon, you know, they have knockoff, like, you know, the microphone I'm using right now, I think, is like around a $300 microphone. I'm sure the mic you're using is a fairly nice one as well, with audio interface, et cetera, you know. But you don't got to start there. Like, you know, you can get, there's a knockoff of the microphone that I'm using that's real similar and 90% as good for $50 on Amazon, if that, maybe even less than that. I always kind of push people in that direction of like, start with the audio, you know, and build from there, because it'll make a bigger difference in proportion, you know, the dollars you spend to go further.
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree with you more. You've actually hit the nail on the head there. Was that you can almost fake the good video. I'm not an expert on video. I'm not an expert on anything. I'm definitely not an expert on video. But when it comes to audio, a lot of times if you're looking at if you're watching a guitar tutorial video or any sort of a tutorial video, 9 times out of 10 you're not really looking at the most. What you look at most is what the players are doing with their hands. So if mm-hmm. they can see what they're doing with their hands, the rest of it doesn't really matter, as long as you can hear it good and it sounds good. What sort of let's explore that a little bit more, just for the person that is sort of still a little bit in lost, or so I'm kind of thinking of a person here now that as they're starting to do okay with their YouTube, they're doing good on their phone, and they want to upgrade their audio, and like you said, stage two, sort of upgrade the audio. But that, to someone that doesn't know anything about audio, might as well be double dutch. Do you know what I mean? So what did you do? Did you go and get an audio interface? Did you go and get a microphone that plugs into your phone? How did you upgrade your audio initially?
Yeah, great question. So what I did is, you know, again, I was shooting on my phone, sometimes my mm-hmm. iPad at the time. And what I ended up doing was, it's just out of frame here, but I've got what's called a shotgun microphone, which I'm sure you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. But a shotgun microphone, for those who aren't, is basically just a hyper-directional microphone. And what you want to do is you typically point it kind of at your face or your chest, kind of like right in front of you. I mean, and it's literally like at the end of my finger right now for anybody who's watching. It's right there, right in front of me. And this is the same microphone that Michelle and I use to shoot our videos. And so whenever I first started teaching on YouTube and actually got a little bit of money, I was like, I want to improve my sound quality. What I did is essentially got kind of a knockoff Amazon version of the same microphone that we have. I don't want to say a knockoff Amazon version. The company is like a legitimate company. I think it was called a Saramonic. It was a TacStar SG598 or something like that. But essentially what it was like a cheaper version of like a Rode VideoMic Pro, or like what I'm shooting on is a Deity D3 Pro. It's just kind of like an affordable, like entry level shotgun microphone. And so that one at the time was not, they might make it a little differently now because this was a long time ago, but at the time, what I did was, that was before we didn't have the 3.5 millimeter jack on iPhones. So iPhones still had the 3.5 jack at that time. Mm-hmm. So what I basically did was just ran I just ran the 3.5 jack from that microphone into my phone, and almost ran it like if anybody's familiar with, like, you know, Casey Neistat, he's like, you know, big YouTube vlogger. That was kind of how he did. He just had a microphone on top of his camera. And that's kind of how I did mine too. Like, I just had a little mount thing that I did where I would just, you know, be shooting with this, and I had a little microphone sticking out, you know, doing that, which is horrible audio practices now. You know, looking back, I'm like, oh, like, dude, put that microphone closer to your face or the guitar. But back then it was a step in the right direction, at least. So
definitely a step in the right direction. And it's worth saying that the reason why the shotgun microphone, I love the idea of the shotgun microphone. I wasn't sure if that's what you and Michelle actually use for your videos. I'm delighted it is. The reason that Cody is saying, for anybody out there that wants more, even more clarification on this, the reason that Cody is saying a shotgun microphone, you're 100% right. It's hyper-directional, meaning that it will pick up the sound of what it is pointed at. The problem with phone audio is that it has a microphone more of an omnidirectional pickup pattern, meaning that it picks up not just the sound of you and your guitar in front of it, but it'll pick up the echo of the wall behind it and the window over there and the general room sound. And if you have the telly on in the background, that's why the audio isn't as good and as direct as you want it. So starting off with something like a shotgun mic, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, because people will still go for, to try and improve their audio, they'll go for like a lapel mic that will plug into your lightning jack, even though you don't have the 3.5 mil, it'll plug into to the lightning, and that is sort of a step in the right direction, but again, not as good as a shotgun mic. And even if you are just using something like that, that has the cold shoe mount or whatever you call that, that you just put your phone sitting in there and stick a microphone pointing that way, that is infinitely better than just sticking the phone in there and letting it pick up naturally. So, yeah. Excellent. What's the next step after that then? Or what was your next step?
Well, my next step was after I had kind of worked with that and worked with what I had, I was just as also a reference, I was super, super broke at the time. So not only did I only put in financially to gear what I was making from YouTube, I really couldn't put more than that in either.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I was like, you know, I was barely making rent and bills at the time and that sort of thing. So, you know, I always tell people like, start with what you have, even if you don't have to, like, but anyways, the next step was kind of starting to get into the realm of like camera gear a little bit, like cameras and that sort of thing. Yeah. And, I started really simple, you know, like I got I'm a really big advocate of like used gear as much as possible. So like Craigslist, now Facebook Marketplace is a big thing. Yeah. But back then it was Craigslist. And so, I got my first like actual real camera, off of Craigslist for like $80 or something like that.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. I don't remember exactly. I think it was some kind of Canon. I think they're called bridge cameras, but it's essentially, it was like a Canon fixed lens camera. It was almost like you could picture, those kinds of cameras that like your parents had 10 years ago or 15 years ago that they'd take pictures on holidays and stuff, those kind of cameras.
Yeah. Yeah, have you? Like, yeah.
Yeah, like that sort of deal. It was definitely not like a video camera. It wasn't dedicated video. It didn't have any great video features or anything like that. I just knew that it was better than my phone and I could plug my microphone into it. And so that was kind of the next step. And from there, I just actually kind of traded my way up, like bought, sold, traded my way up. And so I very rarely have put more money into my camera gear outside of, like, I think what I'm trying to say is I very rarely put money into my camera gear that's not already in my camera gear. So especially nowadays, like we've got, Michelle and I have, of course, a pretty nice setup and stuff, but the whole way building up to that, it was never like, okay, I've made this much money, I'm going to go out and spend $2,000 on a camera. It was never that. Like, it's always been like, okay, I have a $500 camera right now. If I sell this, then I can maybe take that $500 from the camera and then put another $100 that I just made from YouTube into it and get a $600 camera.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of like incrementally over years build up in that way. Still kind of same thing, like only putting in the money that I was making from the work I was doing on YouTube. And so it's very, very incremental like that. You know, I jump from camera to camera, mostly very like affordable cameras and stuff like that for the first, you know, until I would say I got my first like kind of nice-ish camera in like 2017. 2017 was when I first started getting kind of like into like slightly mid-range camera gear. Before that, it was all like sub $500 cameras. And same thing like with microphones too. Like I used all the microphones I used until probably 2018 or 2019. Probably 2018. No, 2019. 2019, I was still using. In 2019, before I switched to actually the same microphone I'm using now, the Deity D3 Pro, I was using a Rode Video Micro, which was, I don't know if you've seen them, but they're these little tiny like $50, $60 Rode miniature shotgun microphones.
Oh, yes. I know them. Yeah. And they've got a little curly cable coming out of the back.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I have it. Yep.
Yeah. And those weren't necessarily, I kind of switched microphones around a few times, but as for beginners, people just getting started, I always recommend those because, and there's a lot of variations of them now and they have different offerings from different companies that are kind of the same thing. But
what
I loved about that microphone is it's so small that you can get it really close to you and, without it being like hugely impeding on the shot or anything.
Yeah.
And so I was, not that it's like a super, super wonderful microphone. It's a fine microphone, but the main thing was that was cool about it was that I could get it so close and it was cheap. So it was like 50 or 60 bucks. So I would go through them, like they would wear out after a few months or something like that. Not a few months. They would probably wear out after like a year, 6 months to a year, or I'd have some kind of issue. And so I would go replace it. And it wasn't a huge deal to have to replace it every once in a while because it was only 50 or 60 bucks. So anyways, so that's kind of, like I said, to get back to the point, cause I was going off on a gear ramble there, but
we love rambling on this podcast, lad. We absolutely love it. Can't get enough of it.
Good. Cause I nerd out about that kind of stuff. I drive Michelle crazy with that kind of stuff, but yeah, it was all very like small, slow, incremental upgrades. I started with what I had when I made a little bit of money from YouTube or some other form of online guitar lesson. You know, social media guitar lesson sort of thing. I would put a little bit of it back in if I could afford to, and just slowly work my way up. And then, you know, years later, now, you know, we have a pretty wonderful setup. It's nothing super, super crazy or anything like that. We're not shooting on cinema cameras or anything, but, you know, we currently now, for anybody who's interested, we shoot on a Canon EOS R with a 24 millimeter prime lens from Sigma, and then a Deity D3 Pro mic. And that's the gear that we use for probably like 85 or 90% of the video work that we both do. We have a few other things too that we use that are kind of just like some specific deals here and there. Like we've got the DJI mic wireless lapel set up. Which is pretty great. We just got that not long ago for mostly for like if we're both doing a video, because the shotgun mic won't really work great if we're both doing a thing. So if we're both in a video together, we'll do the little DJI mics, and those are great for that purpose. But yeah.
Oh, good. So I love that. And then I would imagine then as you traded up, you were trading up for not even just quality, but maybe just features as well. And that's one thing that always baffled me. So I'm sound. I train as a sound engineer. So sound and stuff like that, if I don't understand it, there's a good chance I'll be able to work it out just using logic. Not logic, logic, but as in like actual like thinking brain logic. For anybody who didn't really understand that, logic is a recording software, and it's kind of funny to be. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I got it.
Yeah, you got it. That's all good. But what always baffled me was that that same logic does not transfer to video in any way, shape, or form. Any of the workflows that I learned doing sound engineering in college doesn't transfer over to video. Like it, and I just can't get my head around that. How was the learning curve for, well, I suppose, like if you didn't really do any sort of formal training in anything, I suppose you had to like come at it from just your own angle. But like, how did you learn to get your, like, look at your video compared to my video. You look amazing, whereas I look grand. It's perfectly passable, but it's nowhere near the quality of what you're doing. So how did you get to learn that, is what I'm asking.
Well, first of all, I appreciate it. I think your shot looks wonderful. You're probably better lit than I am and stuff. But same way I learned guitar, really, mostly through YouTube. I don't have any kind of background in video or audio. I mean, other than, like I said, you know, my dad was a sound man. So, you know, I knew like the very basics of like sound and microphones and that sort of thing, just from helping him run cables when I was a kid and that sort of stuff, but hardly anything, and not really anything pertaining to doing something like this, like recording audio. Cause like, again, what I learned there was mostly pertaining to like live music, which is a whole different world. And I mean, really, I just learned about it through YouTube. I mean, you know, nowadays it's like dudes like Peter McKinnon and like, you know, all these people who teach cameras and teach video and audio and all that kind of stuff. You know, same kind of deal back in like 2014, 2015, you know, when I was just shooting on my phone. You know, and I started being like, huh, like, I wonder what I can do with this. I was like, okay, like, I need to start learning about how to actually, you know, improve the quality of like my video and audio. And, you know, I think what a lot of people miss too, is that a lot of that doesn't really depend as much on the gear. It's really actually learning how to do the video and audio. Same way it is with music and guitar, right? Like you can have a $3,000 Gibson or whatever, but if you don't know how to play it, it's not, you know, you're not going to make that $3,000 Gibson sound good. Whereas somebody who knows how to play it can make a $100 whatever sound good, you know? So same thing with video and audio is like, you can have the most expensive gear, but if you don't know how to use it, you're not going to be able to make it look good. And so, you know, even on that level of shooting with my iPhone and a cheap Amazon shotgun microphone, I was trying to like start learning about that stuff. So, you know, the a revolution for me was when I was still shooting on my phone with that cheap shotgun microphone was instead of having, you know, a little mount with my phone and then the microphone coming straight off the phone, you know, facing at me, putting my microphone above my head and like booming the microphone above my head. So it's closer and it's pointing down. So it's getting even less of that ambient room noise and it's closer to my face. So it's more focused on my voice and the guitar that's sitting in my lap. Like that to me, when I learned that, I was like, oh, like, duh, that makes sense. But it was a pretty dramatic leap in, it was a free dramatic leap in quality for my videos. Whenever I learned that. And there's all kinds of little nuances of both audio and video in relation to, you know, shooting video for the purpose of YouTube or content creation in general that, you know, all these things that are essentially, you know, free dramatic jumps in quality. If you just take some time to kind of learn and again, it's as simple as just doing some looking around on YouTube.
There you go, everybody. Knowledge is power. Literally, it's. I'm sitting here listening to all this sort of stuff, and I'm just thinking of like how much time I myself and how and millions of others have probably not necessarily wasted, but misused. We'll say looking into improving things that don't necessarily need to be improved. Like, oh, my audio doesn't sound great. I must need a 10 grand microphone. That's the only way it can sound good. No, learn to use the 50 quid mic that you have. Oh, I must need an unbelievable camera so that I can look as good as Cody does on camera. No, not necessarily. Go and have a look and maybe see what those little hidden settings on your iPhone camera do and start from there.
Absolutely.
As I said, I'm just as guilty. I have been down every single rabbit hole for everything when it comes to everything, because I overthink everything, and whenever I start something new, I always look into how I can get the best results as quick as possible, not necessarily wanting to take a shortcut, but like, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's good to know that it is literally, like I said, knowledge is power. Knowledge is absolutely everything. So let's speak about the actual nuts and bolts of your career and how you have made YouTube a living. So like we've said, trying to explain this lifestyle to others that aren't in the know, bit of a nightmare. How can you make money from just sticking videos of yourself up online? So for those, for the person that's after listening to us go through in depth how to make our videos better, or how to make their videos better, how do they then go about actually making a return to put into those little incremental improvements?
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest thing I kind of tell people is, with YouTube especially, and nowadays I think with any of the platforms, it's really important to have diversified income and multiple streams of income, because it's most likely that the ad revenue that you're making from the videos on YouTube, whenever you get to that point that you can monetize your videos in that way, are not going to, that ad revenue is not going to amount to enough to pay the, I mean, it might be enough to pay the bills, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be the whole thing. You're not going to be able to just only do ad revenue alone. There are people that do, but they're like the fringe exceptions. And so a lot of people kind of go into YouTube thinking like, oh, I'm going to make all this money with ad revenue. I'm never going to have to work again. You know, I'm just gonna be able to like do this and that. It's not like that. The ad revenue, sometimes it depends. There's all kinds of variables, but it's most likely that you will not be making as much as you want from ad revenue, to, you know, do what you want to do or have a good living. It's kind of just a piece of the pie. And so, you know, again, the main thing is multiple streams of income, if you can find it and work on that, and you build it out essentially like a business, right? You become the business, right? So, For me, you know, of course, ad revenue was an element, especially early on. I really only had the ad revenue coming in. So it was just those, you know, little ad revenue checks when they would come through and stuff initially. And then it became a, you know, like $100 a month, $200 a month or something like that here and there as it started to grow. And the other thing about the ad revenue too, that I like to tell people that don't really know about that stuff, is that it ebbs and flows, right? So there are times where it's really, like, you know, making a lot, and there are times where it dips down, and there's not a whole lot of rhyme or reason to it. Of course, it has a correlation to the kind of views you're getting on your content and that sort of stuff. But there are also times where you can be getting the same views that you usually would get, and then it'll take a dip. You know, the ad revenue will take a dip. And there are also times where you'll be getting the same views and it, for some reason, will just go up.
Yeah.
And so, anyways, ad revenue is great, but it's not the whole picture. And so, you know, when I first got started, and I actually first started being able to, I guess, kind of when I first went like full time with YouTube, was in 2018. And the way I was able to actually do that was around that time I started my my online guitar shop that I had, basically just like accessories and just some various little things that I would sell drop shipping on my website. And it was kind of just a deal that I promoted through my YouTube channel. I ran a promotion where I did a essentially like a free capo, so people could go there and they get a free capo, and all you had to do was pay shipping for it. And I didn't make any money on it or anything like that, but it was a way to get people to come to my website and buy the things that I actually did make money on. And so kind of drove traffic to my website. And then the money that I was able to make from the other things that I was selling, I was actually able to kind of not significantly increase my income, but increase it enough between that and the YouTube ad revenue to actually be like, okay, I can actually do this. Like, this is going to be my job. You know, I can actually make a career out of this. And so that was kind of my first, at that point when I did that and all that. And that was, again, around kind of the middle of 2018, was when I was like, okay, I can actually like get by just doing this. If I do it right, if I make a lot of good videos, if I promote this website and all of that, I can do that. So that, and then I started getting my first little round of like sponsorships in like the very end of 2018, brand sponsorships. And so between those kind of three main things, that was when I was like actually just starting to be able to pay the bills with YouTube.
Great stuff.
Yeah. And it wasn't any kind of big money or anything like that. It was like, that's, you know, one small one bedroom apartment and paying the bills and eating cheaply and all of that, you know. But to me, it was like I was able to do something that I loved. So I was like, I don't care if I have to live on the cheap. I don't care if I'm not driving some fancy car or, you know, buying my dream guitars or whatever. As long as I can pay the bills doing something I care about and love, that's all that matters to me.
That's all that matters.
So, yeah.
Excellent stuff. Yeah. I had a talking point about the free capo. I wondered what story was the free capo. I wondered if it was just a plot, like instead of running lead generation campaigns, do I just give away a free capo that people pay for the shipping and it doesn't cost me anything and I get them on the email list? But yeah, very good. I like
that. That's about it. And that actually it's still active right now, but I'm actually not really promoting it anymore long story short, whenever COVID hit, my like the distribution and all of that kind of stuff got just completely screwed for all of that. And the shipping times were outrageous and lots of lost orders, and really just it kind of all fell apart, and it kind of came back together and stuff. And so it's fine. I've still got it active, but I don't really promote it anymore so much. And like I said, it's kind of I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but it's kind of, my whole website is about to be an overhaul and that's on its way out and stuff. So, it was a cool thing. And I think I got to help a lot of people with that. You know, and that sort of thing. Cause that's one of those things that, like, whenever guitarists are first starting out, like if they don't have the right tools, which capo is the right, you know, it's a tool that you kind of got to have, especially when you're first starting out, you know, people need that sort of thing and stuff. So that was a way for them to have a really, really cheap option of getting one. And then again, be able to drive some traffic to my website to help me Absolutely. Be able to make ends meet.
Absolutely. What about things along the lines of like Patreons, online courses? Have you ever dabbled in anything, any of that stuff?
I've kind of tried like Patreon and some various different subscription platforms like that. And I really have just never been able to make it work for myself. I want to actually. Michelle and I are talking about, we have some ideas of some stuff we want to do in that direction as a collaborative thing. So she has her own Patreon that she's been doing for a long time, but we have kind of some ideas that we're trying to flesh out of us doing kind of a Patreon together. And like I said, there are still ideas being fleshed out. So I won't say too much more because we don't really know the direction we're going to go with it just yet. Right. But I have never I've tried it a little bit and I've just never really been able to find what I wanted to do with Patreon and build the platform there. I've done it a little bit, but it just never really took off in the way that I hoped it would. And became where it was like diminishing returns for the amount of time I was putting into it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And so, and then in the form of a course, like an online course, that's actually something I'm kind of in the process of working on now.
Good stuff.
It's kind of funny. I've been actually working on this for a while and I keep just kind of scrapping my whole plan for it. Cause I'm like, I want it to be a little different than what is available out there. I want it to be like my spin on a beginner guitar course essentially. Yeah. And like my, kind of my take on what I feel like is helpful. And also what I feel like is going to help people get going the quickest.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so anyways, I've had several different iterations of that and I keep all of my notes in a physical, you know, notebook. I handwrite everything out like that. Yeah. And I just keep like ripping out pages and throwing them away. Cause I'm like, I don't like that. And
so, you'll get there.
Yeah. So
that's good. Yeah. It's good to know that you have that in the works, or at least you have an idea of having it in the works, or you want to have it in the works. Or it's there somewhere. It's there somewhere. So I'm sure we'll have to keep an eye out for that when you do finally get around to it.
Yeah.
So, what's next for you then? What obviously you're saying yourself and Michelle are thinking of like the collaborative Patreon. We also have to sort this thing out with Netflix. But other than that, what's the next steps for Cody Joyce?
Man, like the main things we're trying to focus on right now are, first of all, I'm trying to just get back to posting a lot more content again. I went through about the past, roughly the past year or two, not so much this year, but really like 2021 and 2022, I kind of slowed down production a good bit. And so I was from 2018 to 2019, I was posting a new guitar lesson on YouTube every single day, literally every day.
Oh, wow.
Full length guitar lesson every day.
Jesus.
With a few little, you know, I'd take a day off here and there, but like every day. And so I don't necessarily want to get back to that. But I have been working throughout this year to get back to a much more consistent posting schedule. I miss that. I miss the consistency of it. So that's something that the past probably 3 or 4 months, particularly, I've been working really hard at, is just getting back to like hitting the posting schedule really hard, getting in front of the camera almost every day, and just building up that same kind of consistency that I had back then, because that was when I kind of saw the most growth with my work was around that time. And like 2020 also kind of reaping the same kind of benefits of the work that I had put in the years before that.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's kind of one of the big things I'm working on right now. That's a lot of my focus, is just getting back to that really heavy consistency with YouTube. And now TikTok has become a big part of the picture as well for me. Yeah. And so that, and then, like I said, there's some other cool projects that we've got going in the background, like Michelle and I are working on. We've wanted to do more together on content for a long time. Like we collaborated a lot whenever we first started dating. And then like now, for some reason, like we just don't anymore as much.
Yeah.
Like we we enjoy making videos together and stuff, but we, I think, have a hard time figuring out what makes sense to make videos together on within our niche.
Yeah.
And so we're really actively like working on trying to find more ways to do that sort of thing. Like we've talked about live streaming, we're talking about this Patreon deal. Mm-hmm. But Michelle and I are in the works of doing a lot more collaborative work soon. Like I said, I've got a course thing that I'm working on. I've got another project that I'm working on that I won't go into too many details because I'm also still fleshing it out and it's still fairly early stages. But essentially, the gist of it is mm-hmm. is that so you know, like I said, I use this physical notebook and that's where I keep all of my like kind of work notes. So like any kind of song I'm learning for the purpose of teaching, stuff like that. And
yeah.
You know, I'll kind of do like scratch notes for every song and I'll have it kind of sitting in front of me while I'm filming. And I had this idea recently. There's a very particular way that I like to keep track of the songs and kind of notate the songs that I am learning. And I'm learning for the sake of teaching. And so I kind of had this idea recently of like putting a little book together of kind of a for beginners to like be able to have a place to write out the songs that they're learning. And almost have like almost like a little journal of the songs that they're learning and how to play each song. Each song is a page and that sort of thing. So it's, you know, like I said, still fairly early stages. I won't go into too much more details than that because it's still being fleshed out. But it's something that I think would be really cool and helpful for beginners. I know it's something that I would have used as a beginner. Because like you were saying a little bit earlier on, when we first got started, you know, it was printing out these, you know, chord charts and stuff mm-hmm. from places like Ultimate Guitar or whatever. And, you know, I had like either like sometimes I had like a little binder or a little folder that I would keep all those in. And they're just all kind of stuffed in the pockets. And you got to like dig through and find the song that you're, you know, oh, like I just learned this last week, but I don't remember how to play it. I don't remember the chord progression, you know, and that sort of thing. And so anyways, I think, I mean, obviously nowadays that's not as like, I'm sure people aren't doing that in the same way as much anymore because it's, you know, we got the whole, you know, everything we could ever want to learn in our phone right here. Whereas like back then, you know, it was like, we didn't necessarily have that in the same way. And so anyways, I feel like there's a better way to keep track of all of that. And it can be a fun kind of almost like I have this, this journal thing that I do every morning or most mornings. And it's kind of in the direction of what I want to kind of build this out to be a little bit, but not like a daily thing, but almost like a slightly meditative way of keeping track of your songs that you're learning and having it all in one place and just being able to carry it with you like a little notebook or a book, you know? So
I think that's a great idea. I think that's an absolutely fantastic idea because it's one thing that I always think about is that when I'm teaching, because I'm a music teacher as well. I teach guitar and I teach drums and stuff. And the mm-hmm. sort of purpose for me, this is what I think that the purpose of any teacher is to, teach people how to play their chosen instrument or whatever songs they want to play. But it's also to teach them how to learn. It's like what I was saying with the when my mate told me about tablature. That was the kind of the light bulb moment for me. Is teaching people how to figure out how to get to the point of what it is that they're trying to learn quicker. And that little diary sounds like exactly what you're saying. So like if they write down that it's a G chord here, but they might know that it's called a G chord. They might have a different name for it. They can just be like, John, that's my John chord or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they can sort of digest it and consume it in a way that makes sense to them.
Right.
Like me with the Sweet Child of Mine, the numbers, which turned out to be tablature, I had no idea what that was. It didn't even occur to me to ask, what are these numbers? I'm like, can someone show me what the chords, the Sweet Child of Mine are, without involving numbers? Because I didn't know what it was that I didn't want to know. And I didn't know how I wanted to consume it. So if So there you go. I think that's a fantastic idea. I think it's brilliant. I wish you the best.
Thanks, man.
I really wish you the best of luck with it. That's class. That's class. You may let me know when that's done. I want one.
Yeah, absolutely, man, for sure. And to your point as well, like Michelle is really, really good about teaching people about how to learn. Like, she's so good at that sort of thing. That's something that she really excels at, is like really teaching people how to learn. And she has her beginner course, and there's a lot of that in there. And some of the videos she does, like this, she's doing this series right now called Don't Fret Friday. And a lot of it is that, like teaching people how to learn, good practices, good techniques for practicing, you know, good like habits and stuff like that relating to practice. Like, she's so good at that kind of stuff, is like teaching how to learn. And I think that's really, really valuable for, you know, because like you and I, like, we're naturally like very, it seems like we're very both, like, when we want to learn something, like, we do a full dive into it. Like, I'm like, I get obsessed, and I can't think about it or anything else or do anything else until I learn everything there is to know about this thing or that thing.
Yeah.
And so, but not everybody is that same way. And again, like you said, to your point, a lot of times when you're starting out, you don't even know what to look up or look into to figure out what you're missing. And you might not even know what to type into Google or what to type into YouTube. And so, being able to like figure out and know, like learn how to learn is super, super important.
Great. I'm really glad that you agree with that. I'm really, really glad you agree with that. That's some sort of like validation for me, because I always say I've got absolutely zero qualifications in this space whatsoever. And it's nice to have it validated by someone that is doing so well in the world. Let's, before we finish up, jump into a quick fire round here of icebreakers at the end of the conversation, just because why not? So these might not be anything to do with music, just a bit of crack. So let's start off with the first question here. What is the funniest joke that you know?
Oh gosh. Oh man, I don't know. What is the funniest joke that I know?
And you don't have to, like, you don't have to censor this. This can be as rude as you want. It doesn't matter.
Oh man. I feel like that's one of those things like where you have all these good jokes and then somebody asks you to tell a joke and you're like, I can't think of anything, but, oh gosh, I think Michelle mentioned this too, but like around our house, like we're very into puns. Like we like joke about like puns a lot. Uh-huh. So not so much a joke, I guess, but like, we'll do things like, you know, if we're both having toast in the morning, we'll have a toast. Like we'll hit our toasts together, like a toast. Stuff like that.
That is the weirdest thing. My wedding anniversary was yesterday, and I got my wife an anniversary card, and it was two pieces of toast, cheersing. It says,
"No way!"
I swear to God.
Oh, imagine, dude, that's great! Wow, man, how serendipitous!
That is. I'm going to change the name of the podcast to something to do with a toast and cheers. That's too. Oh, that's class. Brilliant.
Oh, yeah, I love it, man. Congratulations on your anniversary as well.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. It was 4 years ago yesterday, which is mad to think it was four years. Wow. And you know what I was only thinking on that point, nothing to do with that, is that it was literally 6 months before the whole world closed down. And we had our first anniversary like in lockdown, like in secret, that no one was meant to know about and all this kind of crack. And it's so weird to think all of that has happened since we got married. Is mad. Like,
Michelle and I were about the same, pretty similar, except for slightly different timeline. But like, yeah, we started dating about 3 months before, 3-4 months before COVID. And fortunately at the time we already were kind of living together. Like we had started traveling together. This is a whole story in itself, but we were traveling a lot. Like we were traveling to different places around the US month to month. And we'd go and rent an Airbnb for a month and stay there and film there and stuff like that, and kind of go to these cool places for a little bit. And of course COVID hit and that all had to come to a stop. But you know, we were kind of already living together at that point in that way of just like basically kind of perpetually traveling together. And then whenever COVID, you know, kind of took swing, we ended up settling down where we live now on the coast of Texas. And really, really interesting time to be kind of like dating or, you know, getting married and stuff like that. It was very, very strange. And I mean, it worked out. I mean, you know, it sounds like it worked out great for you guys, worked out great for us as well. But it was definitely a bizarre time to be in early stages of a relationship.
So weird. Cause like we went on honeymoon to Singapore Bali and Hong Kong, which is like the total opposite, probably the opposite end of the world for you as well, but really the total opposite end of the world for us. And that was in like kind of mid October. So we came back like late October, and where I was working at the time was like, you guys call it a kindergarten. We call it a preschool or a nursery where I was working with little kids before I was, this was in a previous life, but I was working there. One of the kids had went to like Australia on holidays or something like that and was coming back and got detained in Hong Kong for like 2 weeks, about a week after I came back. Got detained in Hong Kong because there was no name on it at this stage. There was like no one knew what was wrong. There was just there was people sick or there were, I can't remember the situation. But it was so
wild, man.
We could have a whole other podcast episode about what we did over this and how it all came about. But yeah, I'd totally forgotten that had even happened. That yeah, he was 2 weeks detained in a hotel room because someone was sick and they couldn't. I can't remember. But yeah,
that's wild to
think. I know. And in fairness, look, I do think that the world has benefited from coming out of the pandemic. Obviously, the pandemic was shite for everybody; it was terrible. But there are so many silver linings to be taken from it that it was terrible. It was the worst thing that I think most people will have gone through and will hopefully ever go through, but there are plenty of silver linings I think to be taken from it, this being one of them. I never would have went into teaching if it wasn't, or teaching by myself if it wasn't for the pandemic, and I never would be here talking to you because of the pandemic. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation for a whole other day, and all this wholesomeness is really interrupting our childish quickfire round, which I'm happy enough with. But I tell you what, let's finish off with one question, because this is the one question that I always look forward to asking people. And we'll leave it there. What celebrity would you like to fight?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm kind of a lover, not a fighter. You know, I try to keep it pretty peaceful as much as I can. You know, I'm pretty mild tempered too. I meditate every day and stuff. But I would say probably John Mayer. I love John Mayer. Absolutely love John Mayer. I've got a PRS Silver Sky that you probably can't see in the background. It's his signature guitar. I'm a huge fan of John Mayer. Love him. I've seen him in concert like 5 times. He's amazing. But he probably deserves a punch in the face for the way he treated Taylor Swift.
Fair enough.
And I think I could take him. You know, I'm really tall. I'm 6'7", you know, and I think he's like 6 foot or something like that. So like he wouldn't, I've got like half a foot on him. He wouldn't even be able to reach me, you know,
he would pull the most epic guitar faces while you are fighting.
Exactly. That's what it is. You know, he would, that would be his move. He would use the epic guitar face.
I think that's like the third time since I started this podcast that John Mayer has been referenced. It was one of the very, very early episodes was with, you know, Dagan from PMTV UK?
Oh, Dagan Wilkin.
He was on like episode like 6 or 7. And I think his episode was actually called John Mayer Thinks I'm Russell Brand, because he looks like Russell Brand a little bit. And John Mayer...
I can see that.
Yeah, John Mayer kind of recognized him. I'll have to go back and listen to the actual thing. And then someone else has said something about John Mayer, but I don't think anybody's wanted to fight him just yet. So, John Mayer, you heard it first. Step out for belts. Step out and defend your honor, sunshine, and get your guitar faces on. Cody, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you this morning, this afternoon, this evening, wherever it is you are listening in the world. Before I let you go, where can people find you online if they are looking for you for any reason?
Yeah, absolutely. It's at The Groovy Guitar Dude on all social platforms. TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, at The Groovy Guitar Dude.
Cody, you're an absolute legend. Thank you very, very much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Barry.